pretty impressed, and I'm fascinated because I lived through all this.
There's 18 exhibitions that look at HIV/AIDS, looks at pre-colonial First Nations history and the journey from illegality to legality.
I just feel really grateful that I'm able to connect my story and my personal history of my Gadigal ancestors.
And I think there are other stories that we haven't even begun to tell yet.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. International pressure stalls Ghana's horrific anti-queer bill. Biden defends diversity in his State of the Union address. And Sydney's Qtopia Museum puts Aussie queer history on display. Those stories and more this week, now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Ava Davis.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending March 9th, 2024. Ghana's nightmarish anti-LGBTQ law will remain a bad dream for now. With pressure mounting on President Nana Akufo-Addo from within and without, virtually every major domestic and global human rights group has roundly condemned the Promotion of Proper Human Sexual Rights and Ghanaian Family Values Bill since it passed overwhelmingly in Parliament in late February. On March 6th, Ghana's finance ministry urged Akufo-Addo not to sign the bill because the country could lose the equivalent of nearly $4 billion U.S. dollars in economic support from the International Monetary Fund of the World Bank. Meanwhile, activists are challenging the legislation in Ghana's Supreme Court. Officially, Akufo-Addo has said that it's prudent to await the decision of the court before any action is taken. He may be off the hook. His two-year term is about to end, and most observers believe it's unlikely that the High Court will issue a ruling before voters choose members of parliament and a new president in December's national elections. The bill would criminalize simply coming out and imprison anyone who publicly expresses support for queer rights. If minors are within earshot, the penalty increases to 10 years. Property owners could face jail time for selling or renting to LGBTQ people. Citizens are encouraged to report suspected LGBTQ people to the police for what the bill obliquely calls necessary action. Private same-gender sexual activity is already punished in Ghana with a 3-year prison term. The new bill ups the sentence to 5. In explaining the World Bank's objection to the legislation, their spokesperson said, "We believe our vision to eradicate poverty on a livable planet can only succeed if it includes everyone irrespective of race, gender, or sexuality. This law undermines those efforts. Inclusion and non-discrimination sit at the heart of our work around the world."
Queer people and their allies protested police brutality in the Serbian capital of Belgrade on March 6th. They're responding to the victimization of a young gay man and a bisexual woman during a drug raid on their apartment in mid-February. Police officials claim they did find drugs in the flat, but the demonstrators from queer activist groups charge that the force used during the arrests went well beyond what was necessary. Sanja Milinović is the arrested man's mother. She told the Associated Press that her son was violated and brutally attacked and called the police overreaction sadism. Protest organizers say the assault began after the officers saw symbols of LGBTQ equality on display in the flat. The two suspects were then physically abused and forced to simulate sexual acts. The demonstration was called after police officials rejected demands that the police officers involved be criminally prosecuted. Serbia wants to join the European Union, but hostility toward LGBTQ people, stoked by the politically powerful Serbian Orthodox Church, stands in the Balkan nation's way.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
In a feisty and fiery March 7th State of the Union address, U.S. President Joe Biden was unequivocal in his support for the communities his opponents would like to marginalize for political gain. Biden linked foreign policy issues like the wars in Ukraine and the Middle East and the safety of Taiwan to domestic issues such as bodily autonomy and economic, legal, and social equality.
Stop denying another core value of America, our diversity across American life.
His message to the joint session of Congress included a wish list of needed reforms to protect civil rights, the LGBTQ community in particular.
Banning books, it's wrong. Instead of erasing history, let's make history. I want to protect fundamental rights. Pass the Equality Act. And my message to transgender Americans, I have your back.
The Equality Act is a bill that would enshrine LGBTQ rights in federal law. Various versions of it have been passing in either the Senate or the House for years, but never both at the same time. If Biden wins a second term, he'd probably need Democratic majorities in both chambers for it to become law.
Religious belief can be used by healthcare providers or by an employer-controlled health plan as an excuse to refuse gender-affirming treatment, so says a U.S. federal district judge in North Dakota. The Christian Employers Alliance had challenged the federal policy that interprets the Supreme Court's Bostock ruling as forbidding employers from discriminating against transgender people in health insurance plans under the Affordable Care Act. District Court Judge Daniel Traynor ruled on March 4th that such an interpretation violates First Amendment constitutional religious freedoms. His ruling grants members of the Christian group and individual providers the right to decline transgender patients. The Christian Employers Alliance was represented by the far-right anti-queer legal organization Alliance Defending Freedom, labeled a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. An appeal of the ruling is expected. And the national queer advocacy group PFLAG has stopped Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton from rifling through its files for information about member families with transgender children, at least temporarily. A U.S. federal district court has halted rabidly anti-queer Paxton's supposed investigation into possible violations by gender-affirming healthcare practitioners under the state's Deceptive Trade Practices Act. That law allows victims of alleged fraud or misleading business practices to sue for damages. Paxton and fellow Republican Governor Greg Abbott have been waging war against LGBTQ rights in the Lone Star State for years. Highly vulnerable transgender kids and their families are their favorite targets. PFLAG's lawsuit calls Paxton's demand for information about the group's strong support for pediatric gender-affirming health care a gross invasion of privacy and a clear and unmistakable overreach. District Court Judge Maria Cantu Hexel agreed and granted the request to stop Paxton in his tracks. Her ruling said, immediate and irreparable injury, loss, or damage will result to PFLAG and its members from the defendant's wrongful actions. Four queer legal advocacy groups teamed up against Paxton: the Transgender Law Center, Lambda Legal, the American Civil Liberties Union of Texas, and the National ACLU. Their joint statement thanked Hexel for protecting their clients from having to respond while we continue to litigate the legality of the office's requests. Judge Hexel scheduled a hearing for March 25th to give Paxton's office the chance to challenge the temporary restraining order.
Finally,
how low can you go?
Missouri teachers who contribute to the social transition of a transgender student could face stiff penalties under a bill being considered by their Republican-dominated state legislature. Violators could be charged with Class E felonies, be fined up to $10,000, be imprisoned for up to 5 years, and would even have to register as sex offenders. Social transition contributions include respecting a student's preferred choice of names and pronouns, their general appearance, and providing supportive information if a student asks for it. To first-term Republican Representative Jamie Gregg, Those issues should only be addressed by parents. His House Bill 2885 ignores the fact that some trans youth can't safely find that support at home. Observers don't think the proposal will make it out of committee and predict that it will fail on the House floor if it makes it that far. Attorney and activist Alejandra Carballo's one-word legal critique of the bill on social media was simply insane.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending March 9th, 2024. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Alicia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazor, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau. Stay healthy.
And I'm Ava Davis. Stay safe.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Clover Moore, the Lord Mayor of Sydney, and I'm very pleased to welcome you to This Way Out, the weekly LGBTIQ plus radio magazine for all our genders and sexually diverse communities around the world and those who love them.
Last time on This Way Out.
Power in the darkness, it's time to stand up and fight for your rights.
After the protest and the riot up in King's Cross, they brought those that they put into the paddy wagons here to the cells.
I think walking into those rooms where you've got, you know, the printing on the bricks and that people were in these cells, you can feel the trauma. But I think reclamation and transformation is always a good thing.
Education at the place where things happened is the most powerful that you can get.
Those Australian LGBTQ activists are getting the rare treat of seeing the record of their accomplishments proudly preserved. What was once the Darlinghurst police station in Sydney, where they were abused the night of their own Stonewall, is now a museum to house their history. This Way Out's Barry Mackay took us to the opening of Qtopia in the first part of his visit to the new facility. Now he takes us on a tour of a couple of Qtopia's prominent collections and gives us a look behind the scenes.
We ain't your Bimbo. We ain't your Bimbo. Be anger, Garayura. Be anger, Garayura. Janharagan Yanada. Janharagan Yanada. Gumangui, Gumangui, we ain't a Bimbo.
You're listening to the sound of Auntie Nadina Dixon, an Aboriginal elder performing the Welcome to Country ceremony at the opening of Sydney's Queer Qtopia Museum.
So this is Nadina Dixon, and I've been working closely with the LGBTQIA plus community here in Sydney to bless this beautiful exhibition. And I just feel really grateful that I'm able to connect my story and my personal history of my Gadigal ancestors into our current climate and just share how, you know, powerful it is that the queer community in my lifetime gets to have this space to tell stories. And in a self-determined way, not somebody else telling the stories, they're telling their own powerful stories of resistance, of resilience, of beauty and of celebration. Yeah. And as a powerful group that has a strong history, particularly in Sydney here, in the Oxford Street area, I think it's very important that this exhibition tells the history. of, you know, what the communities contributed to the Australian culture.
Women have made a big contribution to the museum. Dr. Liz Bradshaw is the lead curator at the museum, and I asked her about the representation of women in the space.
There's lots I can say about that. I mean, I didn't want the rooms to be the women's room and the men's room and the trans room and all of that stuff, because we are a complex array of communities who have worked together and supported each other and, of course, had our arguments. But it seemed to me, particularly with Dykes on Bikes, that their role as kind of guardians of the streets, particularly with the escalation of violence in the 80s when HIV hit and everyone was vilifying people with AIDS and saying it was a gay disease. And, you know, there were many murders that went uninvestigated at that time. And, of course, the police have since apologised for that. And we've just seen the handing down of the Royal Commission into those crimes and what had happened. But Dykes on Bikes patrolled the streets in Darlinghurst, Newtown and Surry Hills and just made sure people got home and took care of people. And some of them, you know, it wasn't just riding around and being scary on a motorbike. Some of them were injured in that process. And so I felt that, you know, to not have that be part of the HIV/AIDS storytelling, which is one of our big themes in the museum, would have been remiss. And I think to acknowledge the longevity of Lesbians on the Loose as the major women's publication of kind of queer women's press is really important. But you will find stories about everybody in every exhibition. And, you know, one of the things I'm kind of most proud of is the First Nations storytelling and the powerful stories by incredible First Nations curators around their activism and their involvement from the get-go with Mardi Gras and with human rights.
A former university friend of mine, who I recognised at the opening, gave me her views of the exhibits on display.
Yeah, look, I'm pretty impressed and I'm fascinated because I lived through all this and it's really a bit of a look at the history, and I was wondering which history would make it in. And I'm very pleased with what I've seen because I think it's very indicative of the lives that were lived and our lives that were lived, and, you know, I was happy to be a part of it and I kind of miss it.
Are you happy about the women's representation here?
Look, I think there is quite a bit more than I thought there would be. So, yeah, I think I am.
Another strong point that Dr. Liz Bradshaw is passionate about is the HIV/AIDS crisis and the progressive Australian response to the virus that was taken when it first appeared in Sydney in the early 1980s. One exhibit room houses a recreation of a bed in one of the HIV/AIDS wards at St Vincent's Hospital in Sydney. Dr. Bradshaw explains.
So Ward 17 South is a historical recreation of the first HIV/AIDS treatment centre ever established in Australia. And it was incredibly groundbreaking. Obviously, enormous grief associated with those early years of the crisis, but, you know, very forward-thinking professors in Ron Penny and Dr. David Cooper, who foresaw that HIV would hit Australia even before we knew what it was, and that we needed to proactively address that. And so they were instrumental in a kind of tripartite system for dealing with the arrival of HIV, in working with the community and working with government. And the Sisters of Charity were incredible. They said, we must care for these people and make sure no one dies alone. And you've got to remember that in other places in the world, people were on locked wards where they weren't being touched, they weren't being given their food in any human kind of way. It was pushed through the door. So, you know, we feel very privileged to have worked in partnership with the hospital. And the items you see in the exhibition are from the ward's renovation in the mid-90s. And the storyline there goes up to 2007, because even though the drugs, they made incredible breakthroughs in the 90s, it was really not until 2007 that there was no longer a need, and that's when the ward closed. And I think if there's so much that now, as we get further and further away from the AIDS crisis, for example, gets glossed over and summarised. And in fact, the Australian model of addressing harm minimisation and education was exported around the world because it was so effective to save lives. So there are things like that. There are things about our kind of rebellion against colonialism and the colonial imposition of gender that I think will speak to audiences from anywhere. So come see us.
In terms of square metres of space, Qtopia is the largest LGBTIQ plus museum in the world, says Qtopia CEO Greg Fisher.
It is true, by square metres it is, and we intend to grow it by going upstairs as well to have further storytelling. But it's not just about the size, it's also about what matters. And there's 18 exhibitions that look at the initial topics, look at HIV/AIDS, looks at pre-colonial First Nations history. It looks at the journey from cross-dressing to trans, as well as the media representation and the journey from illegality to legality. So, you know, it's as I said, there are other places around the world that also tell the stories. And I don't think that we need to get too overexcited about who's the biggest and whatever. I think we need to all understand that we all have very important stories to tell and that we all join together to tell those stories.
Is the Australian experience different to that from overseas?
Probably. There's probably a lot of similarities in terms of the journey to equality, but also there's, I think, an imperative for all of us who have the privilege of having a place like this to shine a light on those countries that don't have freedoms yet. We've started on that, but we haven't done enough yet, and I intend to direct that we do more on that and that we get curators to come in and spend the time to research and understand countries that really need to change and evolve in order to protect people in those countries.
Apart from the money the federal government has given, the City of Sydney and the New South Wales governments have given the museum a big funding boost. I'm speaking here with former professional rugby league player and Qtopia board member Ian Roberts.
And you've had some private funding too.
Yeah, absolutely. With the Lachlan and Sarah Murdoch Foundation contributed $1 million. We spoke to them 2.5 years ago. Again, Sarah...
And they were happy to provide funding?
Absolutely. There was no obligation. There was no strings attached. Sarah was committed because her past profession was as a model. She said she'd lost a lot of friends through the 80s, late 80s and early 90s, and she wanted to help. Yeah, there was no restriction on that money. We were given that money and told to use it as we saw we needed. There's also been a number of other Shores and Partners, another organisation that have been fantastic. Again, that was before we were established. These are corporations who are taking a chance on an idea. But that, like I said, that idea has been around for like 20 years. So, I mean, I've been involved... part of the teams for like over 15 years like in this.
Although some in the LGBTIQ plus community in Australia have been critical of some of these funding sources, Qtopia CEO Greg Fisher has a more optimistic outlook.
I always say don't complain, contribute. And we are not the holders of all information. We have given it a start because somebody, if you don't start, you don't start. So we have started. We've taken the bull by the horns. We've got the places. We've got some money. We're going to need a lot more money, but we have started. And what I say is to everybody, please don't complain, contribute, because every single exhibition we have, I know, can have more content and context, and that is the way in which we will grow to be more relevant.
So what's expected for the future of the museum? Liz Bradshaw.
Okay, so for me, this is just the beginning. We have opened with, I think, 16 exhibitions that have really shown us how much storytelling there is to do. And initially, we want to build on these shows. There are things that we can add that we just didn't have time or space to do in this first offering. And I think there are other stories that we haven't even begun to tell yet. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to that. And I think, you know, we will aim to do some big stuff for the anniversary of 1978 in June this year.
Ian Roberts.
Over the course of the next 2 months, the experience here will change again incredibly as well, because augmented reality, all the digital stuff that hasn't been installed yet will have been finished. It will be a very much a more subversive experience. Please come along. Sundays are free. But, you know, like, yeah, tell your friends. Sydney needs this place, and we won't survive, and this won't be a success unless the wider community, as well as the queer communities, you know, come along. And, you know, don't never be afraid to ask questions. That's what this place is about. It's about stoking people's curiosity. It's about encouraging people to talk about those, you know, have those awkward conversations. It's a place of education, culture and history.
And the final word goes to Elaine Chulkovsky, the chair of the board of Qtopia.
I think the biggest hope for me and for most of the people involved at Qtopia is our education program, because as we know, a lot of hate comes from ignorance, not from being discriminatory or homophobic or biphobic or transphobic. So I think education is key. And so when we start bringing our schools programs through, our corporate programs for team building, and when they see what's gone before, the legacy of, you know, the tough times and people have had to fight to be here today, I think that will change hearts and minds.
If you want to check out Qtopia on the net, please go to qtopiasydney.com.au. That's qtopiasydney.com.au. I'm Barry Mackay in Sydney, Australia, for This Way Out.
Good news, good news, ain't that good news?
Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer. This Way Out Preservation and Access Project is well underway. Its historic collection of over 1,550 broadcasts are at George Blood Audio in Philadelphia, being transferred from reel-to-reel tape and cassettes. Thanks to funding from the American Archive of Public Broadcasting and the University of California Santa Barbara Libraries. Special thanks to Keith Brown and Gay Spirit Radio for lending us cassette copies for the project. Stay tuned for updates in the coming months.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Ava Davis and Michael LeBeau and produced by Brian DeShazer. Barry Mackay reported from Sydney. Chubby Checker, Zrazy, Johnny Rivers, Tom Robinson, the Tom Robinson Band, and Sam Cooke performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Yovana Foundation and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And on WZIP Akron, Ohio, welcome aboard to CCC Gospel New South Wales, WVEW Brattleboro, Vermont, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.